Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian. Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. My name is Holly Fry.
And I am Tracy V. Wilson.
And today we're going to talk a little bit about early fossil study.
Yes. When we started on this podcast, I was very sad that previous hosts had already talked about the Bone Wars. Mm-hmm. So I am glad that you found a different crazy fossil story for us to talk about.
It is. It's one of those things that's often told in archaeology studies as sort of a cautionary tale to some degree, but it's kind of a fascinating little story, and the tale that's often told is not really completely accurate. So what we're talking about today is Johann Berenger, and he was born Johann Bartholomaeus Adam Berenger in 1667. He was the son of a professor, Johann Ludwig Berenger. And Berenger was an active scholar. He eventually became the chair of natural history at the University of Würzburg, and he was also chief physician to the Prince Bishop of Würzburg. And the Prince Bishop's patronage enabled Berenger to study a hobby subject, which was fossils. But unfortunately, Berenger was, by most accounts, rather arrogant and conceited, which kind of led to the events that ended up unfolding.
Right. So there were several theories about the origins of fossils at the time. There was the spermatic principle, and that was that the results of marine animals mating could escape into the sea and sometimes evaporate into the atmosphere, fall down as rain, and grow new fish in the rock crevices where the fertilized eggs fell. Which is delightful.
Yeah, so the theory there is that the fish examples that you would find in fossils were actual fish that had grown in the rock.
Because they had fallen from the sky
right.
as fertilized eggs. There's the heliomemory theory, which is that rays from the sun could sort of leave a photo imprint onto stones of the things that the light had already touched. Which is also delightful.
It is, and it makes me think of photography a little bit in some ways. It's kind of a fascinating theory to be rolling around in the early 1700s.
Right. The sun was painting pictures on things.
Mm-hmm.
So the next was the plastic theory, and that's similar to the spermatic theory, but with the fossils spontaneously growing inside of rocks. People had that same theory about other animals, like living animals, too.
Yeah.
It was
That was used to confuse me as a child. Spontaneous
generation was popular.
Yes.
As a concept.
So gooseneck clams were spawning geese in people's minds at the time. So then there's the signature of God, which was Barringer's favorite, and it is mine too, because I want to call it the Slartabartfast theory, if you have ever read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And that's that God carved out the images of animals and plants into the rocks when he was making the Earth.
And Barringer believed that fossils were, quote, stones of a peculiar sort, hidden by the author of nature for his own pleasure, i.e. they were made by a higher power, often just out of a sense of delight, rather than occurring via these other principles that were in discussion at the time. And so to set that up, that kind of sets up our story, which is, as we said, there are two versions. So we're going to start with the first version, which is kind of the legendary version. And according to this version, again, Barringer was a professor at the time, and on May 31st of 1725, two, or sometimes three, depending on the source, students brought him fossil samples. And there were three samples. One had a three-dimensional image of the sun, and two had worms or worm-like markings on them. But they were raised up. They weren't embedded inside the rock. They were on top of it, like extruded.
So he was immediately excited and puzzled by these stones. And between the first delivery at the end of May and November of 1725, more sample fossils followed.
Yes, the students kept bringing him samples. And these contained all kinds of different images, including heavenly objects like comets with tails and moons. And then even things like Hebraic letters. There were plants, there were insects, there were small animals. Things that we would probably recognize pretty quickly couldn't happen because a lot of them involved soft tissue that would normally be broken down in a fossil situation. But Barringer was just super excited by all of these discoveries.
Right. And as we've talked about before, he was pretty arrogant and had a high opinion of his own knowledge. So this is sort of a pride goeth before the fall kind of situation.
Yes.
So he allegedly received somewhere around 2,000 of these stones, which he thought were legitimate things.
Yeah. So he, after studying them over the course of several months as they were coming in, he set about writing what he believed would be a masterpiece in lithography studies, which lithography is what fossils were called at the time, not the modern meaning. And his 1726 book, The Würzburg Lithography, was this masterpiece, which he thought was going to be kind of his own scientific opus. And the book features illustrations of the stones, and it discusses their possible origins, including the theories that we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast.
While he was working on the book, rumors started to circulate that the stones that he had were fake, created by contemporary hoaxers with the goal of seriously embarrassing him because he was pompous and pretentious.
And in his book, because these rumors did start to circulate before it was complete, he actually includes an entire chapter about the hoax rumors. And I'm going to read a passage from it. It's a little bit lengthy, but stick with us. He says, quote, "Then, when I had all but completed my work, I caught the rumor circulating throughout the city, especially among prominent and learned men, that every one of these stones, which, on the advice of wise men, I proposed to expound in a published treatise, were, quote, recently sculpted by hand, made to look as though at different periods they had been resurrected from a very old burial, and sold to me as one indifferent to fraud and caught up in the blind greed of curiosity. Further, that I, once deceived in my wretched turn, was deluding the world and trying to sell new hoaxes as genuine antiques to the silent laughter of prudent souls. I was shocked beyond words to learn that the authors of this atrocious calumny were two men, perhaps best described as a pair of antagonists, whose names I have reason to protect at present, men with whom I was closely associated in numerous functions, former colleagues in the academic society."
He went on in this whole chapter about the hoax rumors to say, "Our idiomorphic stones are not the hand-wrought products of recent artistry, as some persons have shamelessly pretended and attempted to peddle to the public by widespread rumor and gossip."
So the two men he keeps referring to, but not naming, are a geographer, J. Ignaz Roderick, who was a professor of geography, algebra, and analysis at the University of Würzburg, and a historian, George von Eckhardt, who was privy counselor and librarian to the court and the university. But the hoax rumors, of course, were indeed true.
So he became so embarrassed, according to the legend, when he found a stone that had his name carved on it, just as the book was rolling off the presses and into the hands of the public.
And he was allegedly so chagrined at this, and at having been pranked by students, that he tried to buy up every copy of the book in existence and bankrupted himself and died soon after the ordeal in misery and destitution. So that's the sort of legendary version of the story.
Yes, that's the extremely cautionary tale of a fossil hoax. And the real story does have some seeds of truth in that version, but there are some wide swings into the realm of falsehood as well.
The dates for the stones being presented to Berenger in the publication of his book are indeed correct, but the machinations of the hoax and the manner in which it was revealed and what happened post-discovery are quite different. And the real story was actually revealed in court documents and transcripts that were found in the Würzburg State Archives.
Dr. Heinrich Kirchner is recognized as the person who discovered these items in 1935, although Melvin E. Yon and Daniel J. Wolfe, who produced the annotated and translated work of Berenger's book, are the people that are cited with doing so more often. Yon and Wolfe themselves cite Kirchner's work.
And the story that's told in the transcripts is really one of academic envy. It's kind of just a drama that's playing out among colleagues that are just kind of have vendettas against one another and have a jealousy at the heart of their relationship. Berenger did take students with him to dig for fossils, and there were three in particular that were involved in this particular episode. One was 17-year-old Christian Zanger, and two brothers, Nicholas, who was 18, and Valentin, who was 14, Hain.
It turns out that the prank was not something that they thought up themselves. It was a plan on the parts of J. Ignaz Roderick and George von Eckhart to use Berenger's own obstinance against him.
Roderick and Eckhart had apparently hired Zanger to polish stones for them that Roderick had carved and sort of aged them a little bit, and then Zanger would plant them in dig sites. But some were also handed off to a stonecutter's assistant to sell to Berenger as though he had accidentally found them at sites or as though he had come into possession of them, kind of to support the idea that it was natural by having these things come from multiple sources instead of one stream of supply, which might look suspicious.
Right. And part of the reason that he was convinced that these fossil samples were the work of God was the inclusion on some of the stones of language that put them outside the natural imprint theory.
Right. While animals and plants happen in nature, letters don't. So that's part of why Berenger, who was already a little predisposed to think that these were divine creations, that just supported that theory as far as he was concerned, rather than dismissing the validity of the fossils as some people might have approached them.
Right. So because the samples substantiated his theories of where fossils came from, his cognitive bias kind of led him down the path of words mean they're real instead of words mean they're fake.
Yeah, so he fell right into the trap set by his fellow academics. And as Berenger's sample set grew and he started working on his book in earnest, Roderick and Eckhart apparently began circulating the hoax rumor because they were afraid that if Berenger published the work without the hoax being revealed, they could somehow be connected to the findings and would be ruined along with their colleague. Like they were starting to think that if he went ahead and published it, the entire university would kind of be embarrassed and they would be embarrassed, and whether or not they were implicated as hoaxsters, it could be just a really bad scene. So they didn't want him to publish the book.
No, it was partially covering their own behinds.
Oh, yes.
At this point.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's some dispute as to how he was finally convinced that this was a hoax. It is possible that he found a rock with his name on it, but no such rock has ever been recovered.
And some accounts suggest that Roderick and Eckhart had finally thought that things had gone too far and that they outright told Berenger that the stones were fakes, but he wouldn't believe their confession because he was so convinced at that point.
There's also a theory that the church bishop was involved in convincing him of the truth. This is a part of the story that hasn't ever really been clear, and it's not referenced in the court proceedings that we have to document it.
And after the fraud was exposed, though, however he was convinced, Berenger took action. And on April 13th of 1726, there was a hearing at the Würzburg Cathedral chapter accusing Roderick and Eckhart of trying to dupe Berenger. So unlike the legend story where he just is ashamed and tries to hide the whole thing, he actually is pretty open about trying to pursue his hoaxers and bring them to justice.
Municipal trials followed all of this on April the 15th and June 11th of 1726.
The young diggers that were involved were questioned about their involvement, and if you read the Jahn and Wolf translation and annotation of Berenger's book, the hearings are included in the appendices, and all of the specific questions that they asked the kids are in there, which we won't go through because it really is kind of a long, arduous, have you ever carved a thing? Do you know how to carve? I mean, they're really specific questions and they go on for quite a while. But the trial papers begin and end rather abruptly. We've talked about other trials on the podcast and there's often like we get the opening arguments and the discussion and the lead in. This kind of just starts with questions to the kids and ends after the June 11th trial, which was also questions. It doesn't really get to what happened, like, in deliberation and discussion. It just kind of includes the questions and the answers.
Roderick tried to shift the blame to the boys Berenger had hired to help him with his digs. And the Haynes really appeared to be innocent in the whole thing. There was apparently a bribe that was offered to Zenger also to blame the Hayne brothers, but Zenger refused to take it.
Yeah, so it pretty quickly became apparent that Roderick and Eckhart were in fact guilty, and they were disgraced when that became obvious. So the very thing they had hoped to avoid by pointing out the hoax and starting the hoax rumors came to fruition in their trial. So Zanger was implicated, but it doesn't appear that any real punishment came to him because he did know that they were faking these stones. But he did ask the commission for assistance in collecting 8 days worth of wages that Roderick owed him for polishing stones, which I just thought was sort of funny. But in the midst of all of this, he's like, yeah, they were faking it, and he still owes me money for this fraud. I sort of loved it.
So what was the motivation for all of this? It's that the antagonists wanted to ruin Berenger because, quote, he was so arrogant and despised them all.
Yeah, it was just as simple as that. I have seen some kind of less dependable sources that suggested that there may or may not have been a love affair involved between one of the other academics and someone that was connected to Berenger, but I never found any verification of that. It really does, in most articles and discussions of it, kind of come down to they just thought he was an arrogant jerk.
Right.
And they just wanted to put him in his place.
Let's show that jerk face with our fake fossils.
Yeah. And while tales of Berenger's shame and demise completely color the apocryphal story, as we said, it's kind of a cautionary tale of, like, you know, don't fall for things that you just want to believe because you'll end up poor and embarrassed.
And die an early death because of your shame.
He actually emerged from the hoax ordeal pretty well in his time, and he went on to write 2 more books that were not about fossils. So he really came out pretty well in the whole deal. So Eckhart, on the other hand, died 4 years after the trial, and he had actually been working on a history of the Duchy of Würzburg for many years, but after this all happened, he was denied access to the library archives, and he never got to finish that work.
Roderick left Würzburg in shame.
Berenger died in 1740, which was 14 years after the hoax trial. And even though the remainder of his life seems to have gone pretty well, he has not been treated terribly well by history. He's become kind of a symbol of gullibility and the foolishness of cognitive bias.
In 1767, which was 27 years after his death and 41 years after the original publication and trial, Berenger's Würzburg lithography was republished.
And 434 of Berenger's stones, which came to be known as Lügensteine, which literally means lie stones or lying stones, actually survive. There were 494 depicted in the book, and many of the collection that remains are at the University Museum at Oxford. Berenger claimed that he had received more than 2,000, but it's possible that that's a bit of an inflated number. So you can go visit some of these stones. Some of them are apparently in the hands of private collectors as well, because they are still significant and they're an antiquity.
And continue to be a cautionary tale. Even though
yes.
He did not die in shame immediately after.
No, and he went after the people that tried to make a fool of him, which I kind of love about this story.
Don't be a jerk or fall prey to your own hubris is the moral of this story.
Yeah. So that is the story of Johann Berenger's Lying Stones, which I sort of just love. It's one of the stories that we wish there were even more records. There are no, like, portraits of him, for example. But I still just love that it's studied and examined. And as we've said, it's become almost like a fairy tale told to archaeology students
on how not to be duped.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty, Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I believe you have some listener mail.
I do indeed. This actually came to us on Facebook, and it was in relation to a listener mail I had read about Caesar's horse possibly having toes instead of hooves. And this is from our listener, Adam, and he says, hi there, long-time listener, first-time writer, yada yada, but hi. And he said, my listener mail about Caesar's horse comes from Suetonius's The Twelve Caesars. Here is the quote in full. Quote, he rode a remarkable horse, too, with feet that were almost human, for its hooves were cloven in such a way as to look like toes. The horse was foaled on his own place, and since the soothsayers had declared that it foretold the rule of the world for its master, he reared it with the greatest care, and was the first to mount it, for it would endure no other rider. Afterwards, too, he dedicated a statue of it before the temple of Venus Genetrix, which I hope I pronounced correctly. This was published, Adam goes on to say, in about 121 AD, so far before the 14th century date your listener was able to trace it back to. The problem with using Suetonius as a historical source is that he does not judge the validity of many of the statements that he includes in his histories, although he sometimes does put in his own two cents. Instead, he reports what others have said. Often, this means that he is reporting a source that we have either lost the original source, or we have no idea where he got it from. In the 12 Caesars, you get many folk tales, competing versions of events, and mystical explanations. What you get is a popular history and a great story. For those of us who studied history, we must remember that this was before any true historical theory had been established, so there's no filter. What it does show us is how people who lived at the time understood their own history, and it can also be used to confirm or support other versions that can be found elsewhere. Thanks so much. Adam, that's so cool. We also had a listener, Jim, on Twitter that mentioned it.
Yes. He pretty much pointed us to the source, and then I went looking on the internet and found that you can, because it's so old, get that entire book on the internet to read the whole thing if you want to.
Yeah, it was part of Project Gutenberg. And I think in my reply to Adam on our page, if anybody happens to see it, is the link to the Project Gutenberg.
We'll link it up in our show notes.
And we'll put it
too.
In the show notes too. So yeah, it's kind of a cool thing. There are many sources of Caesar's horse having the possible vestigial toes that we've talked about before.
Yeah, and the thought at first that was what people were talking about, and then there was some discussion about whether the hooves had actually been cloven by a person to make them look like toes, so that it was like a human modification of horse hooves, which sounds terrible and painful to me.
It does.
Rather than a sort of
a naturally occurring,
yes, brilliant. An atavism in the horse's feet.
Yes, but as we know, horses did have vestigial toes, and sometimes they still have the bones that are part of that mechanism that are just above the hoof, apparently.
Yes.
It's fascinating stuff, the way animals evolve. So yeah, we loved that letter. It was super cool. Adam is very knowledgeable about the 12 Caesars and is really fun to talk to you about it.
I love all the analysis of where the 12 Caesars fits in to sort of how we understand history.
Yeah. Awesome. Love it. So if you would like to write us with your insights and knowledge of history, you can do so at historypodcast@discovery.com. You can also connect with us on Facebook like Adam did, which is facebook.com/historyclassstuff, or on Twitter like Jim did at Missed in History. We're also on Tumblr at missedinhistory.tumblr.com, and we're on Pinterest. And if you would like to learn more about the subject we talked about today, you can go to our website and type in the words lying stones, and you will turn up a new article called 10 Famous Fake Antiques and the Suckers Who Bought Them. Although none of those people are suckers, a lot of them fooled experts. So it's an interesting read on ways that other people have been hoaxed by fake items. And if you would like to learn about almost anything else you can think of, you can do that at our website as well. And that website is howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
This episode of Stuff You Missed in History Class is brought to you by Audible.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hey fam, I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay.
And we're the hosts of The Bright Side, the podcast from Hello Sunshine that's guaranteed to light up your day.
Like our recent episode with sisters Regina and Raina King about the why behind their production company, Royal Ties.
We have such a huge love for storytelling without walls, without barriers.
Listen to The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.